A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel wrote in with a question that starts small and then spirals. He rents an apartment in Jerusalem, south-facing balcony, same as his last place, and he's been looking at those little USB solar panels and solar-powered string lights and thinking, okay, that's cute, but what if I actually tried? What if I wanted to wring every possible watt out of that balcony? Could you store it? Could you wire it into the building's supply somehow? And he's upfront that this is irresponsible and would violate a lease, but he's asking as a hypothetical, with one practical carve-out. If there were a way to keep a weatherproof battery outside to charge phones, run speakers, keep low-draw devices alive, that might be useful. So the question is, what's the ceiling the solar capture when you don't own the roof?
2,000 kilowatt-hours per square meter per year. That's what Jerusalem gets in solar irradiation, roughly double what Germany averages. And Daniel is standing on a south-facing balcony in the middle of that, looking at decorative fairy lights, and wondering if he's leaving money on the table, or watts on the railing.
He's not wrong to wonder. The sun is doing the work either way. The question is whether the building, the lease, and the electrical code will let him catch any of it.
And that's the whole episode, really. The physics are generous, the institutions are not, so let's map both.
Start with the hardware, because there's a whole product category in Europe that answers Daniel's question directly. They're called balcony power plants, and in Germany they're legal, plug and play, and you don't need an electrician.
Right. The German term is Stecker Solar, plug-in solar. The setup is almost absurdly simple. One or two panels, each maybe 300 to 400 watts, mounted on the balcony railing or stood against the wall. They feed into a microinverter, a little box about the size of a hardback book, and that inverter has a cable that just plugs into a standard wall socket. That's the entire installation. You hang the panel, you plug in the cable, and your apartment starts consuming solar power before it pulls from the grid.
And the German rules cap the output at 800 watts. That's the legal ceiling. Above that, you need a proper electrician and grid approval. Below that, you register with the grid operator, and you're done. No landlord permission required in most cases, because it's treated as a household appliance, not a building modification.
The microinverter is the clever part. A traditional solar array runs direct current from the panels down to a central inverter that converts it to alternating current for the house. A microinverter does that conversion at the panel, so the cable coming out of it's already normal household AC. That's why it can plug into a wall socket safely. The inverter constantly monitors the socket and shuts off the instant it loses grid power, which is the anti-islanding protection that keeps line workers from getting zaps during an outage.
So the hardware is real, it's mature, and in Berlin you can buy a complete kit at the hardware store for a few hundred euros. The question is what it actually produces on a Jerusalem balcony.
This is where the physics gets interesting. A rooftop panel in Jerusalem, tilted at about 31 degrees facing south, gets the full brunt of that 2,000 kilowatt hours per square meter per year. A balcony panel is different. First, it's usually vertical, or nearly vertical, because it's hanging on a railing or leaning against a wall. At our latitude, a vertical south-facing panel captures maybe 70 to 80% of what an optimally tilted panel gets. That's not bad, actually. The bigger losses come from shading. The balcony has a ceiling above it, side walls, a railing, maybe the neighbor's laundry. The panel's own depth means the back edge shades the front edge in the morning and evening. And if there's any building across the street, the reflected light is all you get for part of the day.
So what's the realistic annual output?
For a single 400-watt panel on a reasonably unobstructed Jerusalem balcony, you're looking at 300 to 500 kilowatt-hours per year. That's enough to run a fridge for maybe 4 to 6 months or keep a laptop going for a few hours every day. It isn't enough to meaningfully dent an apartment's electricity bill. A typical Israeli apartment pulls something like 5 to 8,000 kilowatt hours a year. The balcony panel is offsetting single-digit percentages.
Which is the first misconception to kill. Balcony solar isn't a bill reduction strategy. It's something else. We'll get to what it actually is.
Before that, Daniel asked about storage, and this is where the product category has moved fast. The new generation of balcony kits comes with integrated batteries. Anker has the Solix line, Zender makes similar units. These are weatherproof boxes that sit on the balcony floor next to the panel, and they store 1 to 2 kilowatt hours. The panel charges the battery during the day, and then you either draw from it in the evening, or the inverter sends it back into the apartment circuits when the sun isn't shining.
And 1 to 2 kilowatt hours is what, in practical terms?
It's a phone charge roughly 100 times. It's a laptop for a full workday. It's a small fan running overnight. It isn't an air conditioner, not a washing machine, not a kettle. Those draw 2 to 3 kilowatts in a burst, which would drain the battery in minutes. The battery is for low draw persistent loads, which is exactly the use case Daniel described, phones, speakers, maybe a router.
And these units are weatherproof? They're designed to sit outside through rain and dust?
They are. The Anker Solix and Zendure units are rated for outdoor use, IP65 or better, and they're built into the balcony ecosystem with the inverter and charge controller integrated. You plug the panel into the box into the wall, and the whole thing just sits there. In Germany, people leave them out year-round through snow. In Jerusalem, the bigger concern is dust and heat, and lithium batteries degrade faster in high heat, so a shaded spot on the balcony matters.
Now, the irresponsible part. Daniel asked about wiring into the building supply. What's the actual answer?
Technically, a microinverter can backfeed through a wall socket. That's the entire premise of the German balcony kit. The inverter pushes power into the circuit, and any device drawing from that circuit uses the solar power before the grid. If you're producing more than you're using, the excess flows backward through the meter and out into the building. In Germany, with a proper bidirectional meter, you get credited for that export, or more commonly, you just don't get paid, and the grid absorbs it. The system is designed for that.
But in a rented Jerusalem apartment, the meter isn't yours.
Right, and that's where it falls apart. In most Israeli apartment buildings, each unit has its own meter, but the wiring between the meter and the apartment is the landlord's, and the meter itself belongs to the Israel Electric Corporation. Plugging a solar inverter into a socket that backfeeds through a meter you don't own is, at minimum, a billing problem. The meter may not be bidirectional, so it either doesn't register the export at all, or worse, it registers the export as consumption and charges you for the privilege of giving power away. Some older mechanical meters do exactly that. The disc spins forward no matter which way the current flows.
So you could literally pay the electric company for the power you generate?
Yes. And that's before we get to the safety issues. If the building has old wiring, if there's a shared neutral, if the circuits aren't properly isolated, backfeeding can energize parts of the building you don't intend to. During a power outage, a properly designed inverter shuts off instantly, but a cheap one or a miswired one can keep feeding the circuit while line workers think it's dead. That's the scenario that gets people killed. The anti-islanding protection isn't optional, and it's not something you verify by plugging a thing into a wall and hoping.
And even in Germany, where this is legal, the rule is that the balcony kit feeds only the renter's own circuit behind their own meter. You're not allowed to backfeed the building's common supply or a neighbor's circuit. So the legal version of this is already narrower than what Daniel is imagining.
Israel doesn't have the legal version at all. The Israel Electric Corporation requires professional installation and grid approval for any solar connection, and a renter can't get that without the landlord's consent and probably a building committee vote. There's no simplified balcony solar regulation here. The same hardware that's a no-brainer in Berlin is a gray market hack in Jerusalem.
So the legal ceiling is lower than the technical ceiling. The technical ceiling is maybe 800 watts through a plug. The legal ceiling in Israel is zero, unless you go through a process that a renter essentially can't complete.
And the physical ceiling is higher than both. If you ignored every rule, what could you actually capture on a Jerusalem balcony? This is the fun hypothetical. Say you covered the railing with panels, put a vertical array against the wall, laid panels flat on the floor where the sun hits. A typical Jerusalem balcony is maybe 4 or 5 square meters of usable surface. You could squeeze in 1.5 to 2 kilowatts of peak capacity if you were completely shameless about it. That's still less than a single American wall circuit. and you'd be violating fire codes, lease terms, and probably the building's insurance policy all at once.
2 kilowatts peak, and how much energy over a year?
Maybe 1,500 to 2,000 kilowatt hours if the orientation is good and the shading is minimal, which is starting to be real. That's a third of a typical apartment's consumption. But you'd need a 5 kilowatt hour battery to time shift it, because the sun peaks at midday when nobody's home, and without storage you're generating power that just flows back into the grid and, in Israel, possibly gets billed to you as consumption.
So the maximum practical capture, if you threw caution out the window, is maybe a third of your electricity. And the cost of doing it in hardware alone would be several thousand dollars, plus the battery, plus the risk of eviction and a fire. That's the ceiling.
And that's the thing about Daniel's question. The ceiling isn't set by the sun. It's set by the fact that he doesn't own the roof, the meter, or the wiring. The sun would happily give him 2,000 kilowatt hours per square meter per year. The building says no.
Let's talk about what the value actually is, because it's not the electricity bill. Daniel hinted at this. He said a weatherproof reservoir for phones and speakers might actually be useful. That's the real use case.
Resilience. Jerusalem has brownouts, rolling outages and heat waves, the occasional longer blackout. A 400-watt panel with a 2-kilowatt-hour battery is a tiny off-grid island. It can keep a router running indefinitely, charge phones forever, run a fan overnight, power a laptop through a workday. During a blackout, that's the difference between sitting in the dark and having lights, communication, and a cold drink.
And the economics of that are completely different from the bill offset math. If you're buying this to save money on electricity, the payback period is absurd. A balcony kit with a battery costs maybe $800 to $1,200. It generates maybe $50 to $80 of electricity per year at Israeli rates. That's a 10-year payback, and the battery will probably degrade before you break even.
10 years? And that's being generous. The battery loses capacity every year, especially in Jerusalem heat. The round-trip efficiency of lithium-ion is about 90%, so you lose a tenth of the energy just charging and discharging. The panel degrades maybe 0.5% per year. The economics only work if you value the resilience separately. If a blackout costs you a day of work, or a fridge full of food, or just the peace of mind of knowing the router stays up, then the math changes. But you're not buying electricity, you're buying insurance.
And there's a cultural angle here that I keep coming back to. Israel pioneered solar water heaters. 85% of households have them. They're on every roof, the passive black panels with the water tank. That was a regulatory mandate from the 1970s, and it stuck because it's simple, passive, and requires no grid integration. The sun heats water. The water rises into the tank. Done. No inverter, no meter, no utility approval.
And that's the contrast. Israel went all in on solar thermal because it's a plumbing problem, not an electrical problem. The moment you move to photovoltaics, you're in the domain of the Israel Electric Corporation, building committees, meters, grid stability, and the whole thing stalls. The same country that put a solar water heater on almost every roof can't figure out how to let a renter hang a panel on a balcony.
Because the bottleneck was never the sun. It's ownership. A rooftop solar array on an apartment building requires the building committee to agree, the landlord to pay, and the benefits to be split among all the tenants. Nobody wants to be the one who fronted the money, so the neighbor on the top floor gets the credit, so nothing happens. Daniel with a balcony is a microcosm of that exact problem. He's got the sun, he's got the surface area, he's got the willingness. He doesn't have the roof, and he doesn't have the meter.
And in Germany, the regulatory answer was to make balcony solar so small and so safe that it doesn't trigger any of those ownership questions. 800 watts, plug into your own socket, register with the grid operator, done. The grid is designed for distributed feed-in, the meters are bidirectional, and the whole thing is treated as a consumer appliance. That's why it took off. Germany installed something like 500,000 of these in a couple of years.
Israel could do the same. The sun is better, the need is real, the hardware is off the shelf. But the regulatory path doesn't exist. And until it does, every renter who wants this is either buying a portable power station and pretending it's a camping accessory, or doing something that violates a lease, and possibly the electrical code.
Which brings us to the portable power station, because that's the version of this that actually works in Israel right now. Jackery, EcoFlow, Bluetti, These are big battery boxes with inverters built in, designed for camping and emergency backup. They're not wired into anything. You charge them from a wall socket or from a folding solar panel, and then you plug your devices into them directly. No grid connection, no meter, no landlord involvement.
And that's the weatherproof reservoir Daniel was asking about. A 5 kilowatt hour unit with a folding panel is a completely self-contained solar system. It sits on the balcony. The panel folds out. The box charges during the day. And in the evening, you run an extension cord from it to whatever needs power. It's not integrated into the apartment, but it's legal, it's safe, and it answers the actual use case.
The catch is cost per kilowatt hour. A 5 kilowatt hour portable station is $1,500 to $2,000. The folding panel adds another few hundred. You're paying a premium for the portability and the self-contained design, and the solar input on most of these units is limited, maybe 400 to 800 watts. So charging a 5 kilowatt hour battery from a single panel takes a full day of good sun. It works, but it's not fast.
The battery is heavy. A 5 kilowatt hour unit weighs 50 kilos or more. You're not carrying it in and out every day. It lives on the balcony, which means it needs to be weatherproof, which most of these are, but also protected from the Jerusalem summer heat, which is brutal on lithium cells.
The heat is the silent killer. A lithium battery sitting on a Jerusalem balcony in August is baking at 50 degrees Celsius, and that accelerates degradation dramatically. Every 10 degrees above, about 25 Celsius, roughly doubles the rate of capacity loss. So a battery that would last 10 years in a climate-controlled room might last 4 or 5 on a hot balcony. That's a real cost that nobody puts in the marketing materials.
We've got three tiers. The decorative tier, USB panels and solar lights which work fine and are basically toys. The integrated tier, a balcony kit with a battery, which is what Daniel actually wants but isn't legal in Israel. And the portable tier, a power station with a folding panel, which is legal, useful, and expensive per watt.
Then the fourth tier, which is the hypothetical maximum, covering every surface with panels and running a 5 kilowatt hour buffer, which is technically possible, physically constrained to about a third of an apartment's consumption, and legally insane.
I want to circle back to something you said earlier about the meter. The idea that an old mechanical meter could charge you for exported power. That's the kind of detail that sounds like a bug, but is actually a feature of how little anyone planned for this. The entire grid architecture assumes power flows one way, from the utility to the consumer. Every piece of equipment, the meters, the transformers, the protection relays, was designed around that assumption. Distributed generation breaks the assumption, and the grid's response isn't graceful.
That's the second-order problem that Germany solved and Israel hasn't. When you have 500,000 households feeding power back into the grid, the utility has to manage voltage on lines that were never designed for bidirectional flow. Feed-in can push local voltage too high, which trips inverters and annoys neighbors. Germany dealt with this by updating the grid codes, requiring inverters to throttle when voltage rises, making the meters bidirectional, and building the whole regulatory apparatus. Israel's grid is smaller, more isolated, and has different problems: security, demand peaks, water desalination loads, and the institutional will to rework all of that for balcony solar just isn't there.
The answer to Daniel's question, what's the most you could do, is unsatisfying. The most you could do technically is about 2 kilowatts peak and maybe a third of your annual consumption. The most you could do legally is nothing. The most you could do, practically, is a portable power station and a folding panel, which gives you resilience but not integration.
The most you could do in Germany is 800 watts, plug and play, with a battery, and it's just a normal Tuesday. Same sun, same hardware, completely different answer.
The sun isn't the bottleneck. The grid is. And the grid isn't a technical problem, it's an institutional one. Israel proved it could do solar thermal on every roof because that was a plumbing mandate. It hasn't done solar electric on balconies because that's an electrical mandate, and the electrical system is owned by a utility that has no incentive to make it easy.
The other thing I keep thinking about is what this does to the renter's relationship with the building. Daniel's prompt has this undercurrent of, I know this is against the rules, but what if? And the answer is that the rules are the entire game. The physics are permissive, the lease is not, the fire code is not, the utility's interconnection rules are not. A renter who wants solar has to either stay within the portable power station lane, which is useful but limited, or become the person who rewires the balcony and hopes nobody notices.
The person who rewires the balcony and hopes nobody notices is also the person who, when something goes wrong, has no insurance, no permit, and no defense. The building burns down. The insurance company asks who installed the electrical modification, and the answer is the tenant with a microinverter from the internet and a dream. That's not a hypothetical. That's how you lose everything.
The responsible version of the irresponsible hypothetical is actually pretty clear. If you want solar on a rented balcony in Jerusalem, buy a portable power station, get a folding panel, keep the battery out of direct sun, and use it as an off-grid accessory. Don't backfeed the building. Don't touch the wiring. Don't plug an inverter into a wall socket. The moment you connect to the grid, you've crossed from camping equipment into electrical infrastructure, and that's a different legal and safety universe.
Yet, the fact that Daniel even has to ask this question is the indictment. He's standing on a south-facing balcony in one of the sunniest cities in the world, and the best legal answer is, buy a camping battery. That's not a failure of imagination. That's a failure of regulation.
The inverter wasn't stolen. It was borrowed from a sound system that was being thrown out anyway.
I'm sorry.
The inverter. You said stolen. It wasn't stolen. It was a spare from a PA rig that got scrapped after a tour. I asked the road manager. He said, take it. So I took it.
I didn't say stolen.
Somebody said stolen. Doesn't matter. The point is, late 90s, I was doing sound for a band that played outdoor festivals in the Negev, and we ran the whole mixing desk off a car battery and a 50-watt panel. The inverter was the weak link. Sandstorm got into it, shorted the thing, and we finished the set on a generator that sounded like a lawnmower. But for about 4 hours, we ran a full 16-channel desk on sunshine in a car battery. That's when I got interested.
You got interested in portable power because a sandstorm killed your inverter.
I got interested because it worked until it didn't. Which is more than most things.
You've built something for your apartment since then.
I have a deep cycle marine battery and a folding panel on my balcony in Tel Aviv. 100-watt panel, maybe 120. It charges the battery through a charge controller, and I run a fan off it during blackouts and charge the e-bike. It's not wired into anything. It just sits there.
And the landlord?
Saw it once. Asked if it was legal. I told him it was a scientific instrument.
Scientific instrument.
He nodded and walked away. I think he was more worried I was cooking meth than generating electricity. The battery weighs 20 kilos, by the way. I haul it inside every winter because the rain gets under the balcony awning, and I don't trust the charge controller in the damp. So every November, I'm carrying a marine battery through my living room like I'm moving a small coffin.
That undercuts the romance of the off-grid island somewhat.
The off-grid island has a carrying handle. That's the honest version.
But the fan and the e-bike, that's the resilience use case. You're not offsetting your bill. You're just not sitting in the dark.
The fan matters more than the e-bike. August in Tel Aviv, the power goes out, the air stops moving, and you're lying there in the dark listening to your own heartbeat. The fan runs all night off that battery. I've done the math. It pulls about 40 watts. The battery's got maybe a kilowatt hour of usable capacity. That's 25 hours of fan. More than enough. The e-bike is just because the panel's there and the battery's there, and why not?
The entire value is psychological.
I know I can keep a fan running for a day. That's not psychological, that's a fan. But the knowing is the part that matters. The grid goes down and I don't panic. I go out to the balcony and plug in the fan. It's a tiny off-grid island in a city that's all grid. That's worth the 20 kilos.
The landlord thinks you have a scientific instrument.
I do have a scientific instrument. It's a 100-watt solar panel with a charge controller and a deep cycle battery. That's a science experiment. The fact that it also runs a fan is incidental.
I want to know what happens when the battery finally dies, and you have to explain to the landlord why the scientific instrument is going to the recycling center.
I'll tell him the experiment concluded.
The thing about Hilbert's setup is that it's the portable power station approach, but built from components. A marine battery, a folding panel, a charge controller. It's cheaper per kilowatt hour than a Jackery, and it's repairable. If the charge controller dies, you replace the charge controller. If the battery dies, you replace the battery. The integrated units are more polished, but they're a black box when something fails.
The marine battery is lead acid, not lithium, heavier, lower energy density, but more tolerant of heat and overcharging. For a balcony in Tel Aviv, that might actually be the better chemistry. It just requires the carrying handle.
And the back.
The practical answer to Daniel's question is sitting on Hilbert's balcony. 100-watt panel, a deep cycle battery, a charge controller, and a fan. No grid connection, no landlord permission, no fire hazard. Just a scientific instrument that happens to keep the air moving when the power dies.
The theoretical answer is 2 kilowatts peak and a third of your consumption, if you're willing to risk eviction and a fire. The gap between those two answers is the entire story of solar and rental housing.
Which leaves the open question. As these balcony kits get cheaper and the batteries get more integrated, do cities like Jerusalem adapt, or do renters keep improvising? Germany legalized the thing and 500,000 households bought in. The hardware is the same in Jerusalem. The sun is better. The only missing piece is a regulatory category that says this small, safe, plug-in solar system is allowed.
I think the next decade is going to see solar-ready balconies as a rental amenity. Some apartments already advertise EV chargers in the parking garage. It's not hard to imagine a listing that says, south-facing balcony with pre-wired solar hookup. The landlord installs the microinverter and the bidirectional meter. The tenant brings the panel, and the building committee gets a cut of the feed-in credit. That's a solvable coordination problem.
Until then, the answer for Daniel is the scientific instrument. A portable power station, or a component build, a folding panel, and the understanding that he's not powering his apartment. He's powering a fan, a router, a phone. That's the ceiling, and it's not nothing.
Daniel's hypothetical isn't crazy. It's just ahead of the rules. The sun is already doing the work. The grid is the only thing standing in the way.
Thanks to our producer, Hilbert Flumingtop, for keeping the show running, and apparently for running a small off-grid power station on his balcony.
This has been My Weird Prompts, the Human AI Collaboration Podcast. If you've got a weird prompt, email us at show@myweirdprompts.com.
We'll be back soon.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth's slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The hosts dig in, the hosts dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.